Hello and welcome to another edition of Teaching Restored, where we are your weekly teacher council meeting. I'm Kevin Jones.
And I'm Julie Hilliard.
And today we have someone who wrote in and is asking us a question. And I love these. So for everyone else, if you have issues or if you want ideas or if you don't know what to do or whatever, we love people who write in to say, hey, how do I do this? Or hey, even I've got an idea, and then we can expound on that, whatever. We'd love to hear from you. So please, at any time, teachingrestore.com, let us know, and then let's share this. Because if you're having an issue, then you know other people are having an issue. If you're right, having a success, then hey, we want to share that as well. So let us know. So this one, here we go. I'm just going to read the email I received.
This is so good.
And I modified it just a little bit to keep it a little bit more generic so that no one can tell kind of where it's from, because I know sometimes when we read these, people will go, oh my goodness, I think they're talking about my class. No, it's my class, right? And get a little self-conscious. And...
Right, right. We don't want anybody thinking that.
No, not at all. All right. This person actually has listened to pretty much every episode, which is kind of cool. Here's a question. She says, my question, there I gave it away. That got rid of half of the people in the world. All right. She...
Narrowed it right down, Kevin. Narrowed it right down.
Sorry about this. All right. My question is, what to do with adults in gospel doctrine? The psychological safety in the class kind of went out the door. In fact, my first week teaching, several people asked me before class not to call on them and told me they felt dumb answering questions. As I've taught, a few people had very, very long comments and sometimes contradicted someone else's comments. I felt derailed and I'm quite sad about it. I listened to your episodes about being derailed and the one about too much discussion in class several times, which are so good. I just don't know how to have a learner's council with this group. People had warned me about very long-winded people in class. I kind of feel an imbalance of power. I'm younger than these people, and am just not sure how to gracefully ask them to keep their comments short or not to say things that disconnect the class. But I'm frustrated because people who have previously shared great comments now keep quiet, which I think we can all relate to, right? I know they don't mean to derail, but thanks for your podcast. I learned that they just may just want to be seen, heard, and valued. But I don't know what to do. Can you help me with your great advice? So I don't know about great advice, but we're going to do our best to give ideas and different things that may help with that. So Julie, there are a couple of different issues in this comment, in this email that was sent. First, obviously, we have some people who are derailing the class, long-winded and contradict others and kind of, it sounds like, kind of take over the class in a way and just disrupt the flow of what she's trying to do and trying to teach, which is frustrating for every teacher, I think. Another one is that people feel dumb answering questions, so they don't want to be called on. And those two things, I think, may actually go hand in hand.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
When you figure out one, you can probably figure out the answer, or the answer the other one will just happen as well. So let's talk about ideas of what this person can do. What do you have right off the top of your head, Julie?
So I actually kind of took a few notes about the different issues, and I want to start by really empathizing with what a struggle this is. Like, I sense the humility of this person, her desire, we know it's a hers. Dang, Kevin. Just kidding. Her desire to like do what's right. But like, it is intimidating when you feel like other people in the class, think that they're smarter than you and, are a little bit older than you. And I mean, it just kind of puts you in a spot that can feel really, really hard. And I think that she nailed it with saying that the psychological safety in that space is a problem. So let me back up just a little bit. This first part about feeling dumb answering questions that certain people do, because like you said, there are kind of these two parts, right? let's see if we can build into how they're connected. And let's talk for just a second about why people might feel dumb answering questions. Good. What are some reasons that you think people might say, oh, please don't call me? Obviously, psychological safety is at risk, but get specific. Why? What happened to cause them to feel dumb? Ideas? What do you think?
Well, I've seen lots of different ways that this has actually happened. But my guess, if I'm just going to diagnose this one, is that these few people who are kind of taking over almost sound like they, you know, for lack of a better term, know it all. You know, they're know it alls. Mm-hmm. And other people may think, oh, my goodness, I don't. And maybe it's not that that's a bad thing, but other people think, well, I don't know as much as that scholar. I would feel stupid if I were to speak up and say something and it's not, you know, perfectly correct in line with the scriptures or with doctrine or something. And basically it feels like a lot of people feel like they have to have the right answer rather than saying, yeah. Here's a thought. Can we riff off that? Can we have a discussion? It's almost as if you better have the right answer for this. And so a lot exactly. of people pull back.
Right. So two things in there. One is that you feel like you might not have the answer right. And two, the responses of other people to you might have made you feel a little bit insecure. And I say make you know, nobody can make you.
Right.
But you know what I mean. Yeah. And so I started, as I think about that just a little bit, I think about this idea that, you know, obviously the problems that she's presenting aren't going to be solved overnight. But one of the things that needs to happen is that trust needs to be restored in that space. And I remember having a teacher who I would make a comment that was really thoughtful and even heartfelt. And he literally wouldn't even acknowledge it. Like he would act as though I'd never said anything. And I realized that that was his MO. That was his style of operating. It wasn't ever personal. But other people, I could sense it. Like I would watch it happen with other people too, who had made great comments, and it would just literally, as though nothing was even said, he would move on. And I remember feeling like everybody in that space kind of must feel dumb every time they make a comment. And so there's possibly some history as well. And so if you flip that on its head, one of the best things that you can possibly do is to create trust that when somebody makes a comment, regardless of what the comment is, that you are going to validate that comment and that you're going to make it sound like it had a really great point. And so even if somebody makes a comment that is poorly worded or that you might actually feel differently about, let's say it is a comment and, you know, they maybe said something that was incorrect or whatever, I venture to guess that there is a way for you to repeat it back and twist it just enough to bring out the truth, just enough to like help it match your point a little bit. And people will say, like, I've had people say this to me before. I'm not saying that I do a great job of this, but I've had people say to me when I rephrase the comment, oh, that was more what I meant than what I said. And I'm like, oh, I didn't mean to like reword it, but then they feel smart. Or you made me sound smart or whatever. And so part of what I think needs to happen is that there needs to be you, beautiful teacher, modeling really great validating responses to other people's answers. And so those that are saying, "Don't, please don't call me, I feel dumb," are going to be like, wow, I should never feel dumb in here. She doesn't make anybody feel dumb. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. I love that. When a teacher does that, everyone can open up. But the caveat I have here, at least that I'm thinking of, is that it's not only the teacher that they need trust with; it's with everyone else as well, right? So I think the teacher doing that is very, very important and very needed and is a requirement. But then let me ask you, what about the rest of the class? How do we help them to feel comfortable and have trust in the rest of the class?
Okay. So that part of why you model it is because other people start to do what you do. Here is a thought. So one of the things that Stephen Covey used to do a lot was talking stick communication. And he had this basic skill. And I don't know if I've taught this before on this podcast, but I'll just really quickly review it. They would have these gatherings with these tribal chiefs, and they would pass around a talking stick. So here's our talking stick for today. And the idea was that whoever was holding the talking stick could speak, and that everyone else had to help that person feel understood. And so the only other people that would speak would be those that were asking a clarifying question. So everyone's job, except for the person with the talking stick, was to help them, holding the talking stick, that person, help them feel understood. And so I wonder if there might almost be, because when you're teaching youth, you can get away with some kind of games, if you will. I wonder if there's a way to create a game, if you will, and say, okay, we've got a class rule for today. And I want us to practice this because I think that this skill, practicing this skill, will help us to learn empathy with each other. And so what you do is you basically ask a question, have somebody raise their hand, give that person the talking stick, but then no one else gets to respond until they've earned the talking stick, meaning that they have to repeat back what they heard that person say from that person's perspective. And then once that person's like, yeah, that's exactly what I meant, then they would pass the talking stick to the next person. So the way that you earn the privilege of talking in class is to make the previous person's point before you get the talking stick. Here's an example. You could even start it out by, here's my point, here's my question. Somebody takes the talking stick and they say, okay, I think your point was da da da, and the question you asked is, and you would say as a teacher, you'd be like, yep, you nailed it. Okay, so here's what my response is. And then anyone else who wants to build on that, the prerequisite is that they first make the previous person's point. So it would be cumbersome. You wouldn't get through that much. But what you would do is instruct everyone in that class to build on each other's comments and to try and see the comment from that other person's perspective. So these contradictory things that happen, part of what they have to do is rephrase it. And then that person says, yeah, you totally got it. Or no, that's not what I meant. Because I would venture to say that some of the adversarialism is coming from misunderstandings and people not listening very well, rather than people actually preaching false doctrine or something to that effect in your class. I don't know. Yeah. It's an idea.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you about this, because some people listening may think, okay, seriously, I'm going to get a stick and make people do this. I mean, come on, this is gospel doctrine, right? I mean, this is never done. No one does this. This may seem a little hokey or whatever, but I want to kind of reshape what this person may be trying to do. We may think, okay, you're a teacher, you're supposed to teach a lesson. Right now, no, you're not. Don't look at it as I'm going to teach a lesson. Make your whole focus that everyone needs to share. Everyone who wants to share can share freely because they trust each other. And that is your focus. It's not so much the content anymore.
Yep. Rephrase it. Your focus is to keep the class in dialogue. So Keep the class in dialogue means that people are adding to, this is crucial conversations, right? Adding to the shared pool of meaning or the pool of shared meaning. The idea is that everybody feels like they can add their perspective to this shared pool.
Yes.
And that requires psychological safety. And so your goal is to keep everyone in dialogue, which means you're creating an environment of psychological safety.
Yeah. And you mentioned it may be a little bit cumbersome, and you're right. It may be, but that's okay for right now, because your goal is not just the traditional teacher goal or what people think of as the traditional teacher goal. Let's expand that a little bit. You have to kind of build the foundation to have the good discussion. And if you have to break it down, it may get a little bit worse than before it gets better. And that's okay. If you don't have that psychological safety, if you don't have that trust, then the problem is going to keep going on and on and on. So it's worth it to try it.
Well, and so this idea of talking stick communication and this little principle, this may not be the right thing, but let me suggest something. I think that in our classes, part of what we're doing is we are figuring out how to be better learners. Like, that's part of why we go to church. We go to church so that we can, actually, you know what? Let's read a couple of scriptures about this. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 4. We're going to read in Ephesians and the Doctrine and Covenants. So Paul in Ephesus, right? We're going to Ephesians. Hold on. Where is it? There we go. Chapter 4. And if you look at verses 11 through 13, it's talking about the different roles that people play. So this is when Paul's talking about, like he's talking about the unity of the body of Christ, I think, in this, isn't he? I think he is. One faith, one baptism, endeavoring to keep the unity of spirit and bond of peace. Okay. So do you want to read 11 through 13 real quick?
Yes. And he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the perfecting of saints.
Teachers. Yep, sorry, keep going.
For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come in the unity of faith and the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ.
Okay, so what is the role of apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers? Like, what would you say is the role as outlined in this scripture?
Well, perfecting of the saints, work of the ministry, edifying of the body of Christ, right? Go ahead.
Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing that, but the real purpose behind it is in 13, I think, till we all come to the unity of faith.
Okay.
And the knowledge of God.
And, right. Okay, so I think that we could maybe put this under the umbrella of becoming a more Zion people, right? Like,
sure.
The purpose of the kingdom of God on the earth is to create Zion. What is Satan most afraid of because he is powerless against it? Zion. Book of Revelation teaches us that. He lies in wait to devour the man-child that is birthed from the woman, and the man-child represents Zion, and he wants to devour it because he's petrified of Zion. Zion cannot even whimper before Satan is threatened by it, because the unity of the body of Christ, the unity of saints, renders Satan powerless. And so we are trying to create a Zion people here. We are trying to create a unified people. And there's a word in verse 12 that I want us to bounce to Doctrine and Covenants with, and it's the word edifying. So now go to Doctrine and Covenants chapter 50. And let's look at verses 22 through 24. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'll go ahead and read that. Is that okay?
Sure.
So it's talking about he that preacheth, you, lovely mm-hmm. teacher, and he that receiveth, all of the people in that classroom. The goal is that they understand one another. Okay. Talking stick communication.
Yep.
The goal of that is literally to not just be understood, but to understand one another. That's one of your primary jobs as a teacher. And the goal is that as a result, both are edified, there's that word again, and rejoice together. Okay? Now, the idea that that which doth not edify and is not of God is darkness, I think you're feeling a little bit of a lack of edifying comments. Mm-hmm. That might be what's going on. And so the next part about God being light and more, like the goal is to create together an experience so that everyone can feel the Spirit and receive more light, more knowledge. What does edify mean? Like how this idea that you understand one another and as a result, everyone's edified. What is edification?
You know, I'd love to actually look that up in the dictionary, but I see it as kind of adding to or more completing in a way.
Yeah, more completing specifically. So dictionary definition talks about enlightening or informing, instructing or improving in moral or intellectual ways. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's lifting, building, right? But it's specifically in religious knowledge or moral things or intellect. So it's the idea of basically religious instruction should lift all people. All boats rise. And so you want to create an environment where everyone is lifted together. And the only way that you can do that, according to this verse, is if you understand one another. And so I do kind of think that this, an exercise like talking stick communication, bringing it up and actually practicing it, you could even be explicit and say, one of the things that I have struggled with as a teacher is I sometimes feel like we don't do a super great job of building on each other's comments. And so I would love to create an environment where we're better at that. And so let's go back and practice the really basic skill and be explicit about what you're doing. And you could even read that verse and say, my goal is that we understand one another so that we can all be more edified. And I think, does everyone share that goal? You know, ask people. And if they're on board, say, are you willing to try something like this? Sorry, you were going to say something.
No. I love that. One thing I do want to say, though, that I've never really put together reading in this verse. I sometimes I like to look at what it doesn't say.
Oh, okay.
Right? So, for example, verse 22, wherefore he that preacheth and he that receiveth, it doesn't say understand the doctrine. What it says is understand each other. Right. And when we make, but we're so focused as teachers on helping people understand the doctrine and the principles of the gospel.
Right.
What if our focus more was to help each other understand each other?
Right.
And let the doctrines and the principles come from that. Not that it's secondary, but we're more focused on how do we help each other edify each other and understand each other, then the whole doctrine and principles and application can be expounded from there. But you can't get to the doctrine and principles and application if you don't understand each other and don't have really the talking stick communication or what that provides in the end.
You know what I love about what you just said is it makes me think about the idea that the doctrine, understanding it intellectually is not the goal at all.
Right.
Like that's not the point. The point is that we figure out how to internalize it. And in my opinion, by seeking to understand each other's perspectives, that is loving each other. That is like the gospel in action in a way. And so the skill that is required to do that spills over into us actually practicing the gospel. And the other thing that I think about that is that I feel personally, that there is so much more power in the way that other people have figured out how to make the gospel real than there is in just reading by myself. And like, I love to take what I've read, think about it, think about how I can apply it, and then talk to people and like learn from their experiences and learn from what they've done. And I feel like the Spirit can really open our minds when we do that. And so I love that you're saying, how powerful would it be to shift and say, we're going to work on practicing the principles of the gospel as a priority, even over me teaching the doctrines of the gospel as I understand them.
Yes, absolutely. I was talking to a new seminary teacher and who is just getting into seminary right now, just teaching it really for the first time. And she was like, holy cow, this isn't working. This is not what I thought it was. It is really hard. That's a whole nother episode that we've got to get into, right? But my thoughts started going to, especially this morning, as I was studying the scriptures of this morning, my thoughts went to, again, stop teaching the doctrine, understand your class, understand each other, and then you can put the doctrine and the learning, the content, if you want, to that. But if you don't understand each other, you're just throwing content up on the wall, hoping some of it sticks. And really, that's what a lot of teaching is these days, right? They take the teachings. Okay, you know, Samuel is up on the wall. This is what happened. What do you think about that? Okay. And they put it up on the wall. Hopefully some of it sticks with someone and they go, oh, I've got a great idea from that. I can use my life. Rather, why don't we dive into each other's lives, you know, not appropriately, and really get to know each other and then have the doctrine come in because of those. And when we start to understand each other, it's so much easier to apply the doctrine when we understand each other rather than saying, I hope so. Did anyone get anything out of today? Was that helpful?
Right. Well, and I think like you're making me think a little bit about the seminary one that we did with Brad and Greg, and right. they talked about how on Thursdays they create space to actually just ask questions of each other. He'll pose a question. So it doesn't need to like take the whole class, but I think that what I hear you saying, you know, you have gospel doctrine every other week. And right. there's not a ton of continuity because people have, you know, different classes, different responsibilities. And so it's a little bit difficult to say, get to know each other. But what I think I hear you saying is figure out how to help people feel connected to one another. And I think that part of how you do that is by just really trying to understand where each other are coming from. And that is the goal of talking stick communication. It's perspective taking. Mm-hmm. It's not to be able to regurgitate the words that they said. It's to be able to put on their eyeballs for just a second and try to see the world as they see it so that you can understand why they've drawn the conclusions that they've drawn, how they've come to the place of feeling or thinking the way that they do, right?
Yes. And so, even more so than just this class, when they learn this skill in your class, they take it home. They take it to their ministering. They take it to right. work. They take it everywhere. And then they can start doing that within those relationships and getting to connect with those people on a right. deeper level. And that changes the game, totally. Not just for, you know, just for the class time, but that changes the game for their life.
Right. Like, I mean, I think about how many areas of our life would not benefit from this. And the answer is zero. Mm-hmm. Like every area of our life is blessed when we seek first to understand, when we really try and see things from another person's perspective. All ships rise all the time.
Yes.
Like we are edified. They feel validated and often feel edified. They're more receptive to the things that we have to offer. It strengthens our relationships. It builds trust. It breeds authenticity because you feel like, hey, you brought your real you to that. I'm going to bring my real me now. Like it's a powerful concept. Here's another thought though. So I'm thinking about the skills about restoring safety though, because what she brought up here is this idea that psychological safety is at risk, that it is really like a problem. So I think about the skills that I usually would employ to restore safety and how they would apply to a group setting instead of just, you know, like a one-on-one conversation or something like that. And there is a skill called contrasting. And I think I've talked about this before. I'm not positive. But one of the things that you can do to restore psychological safety is contrast what you don't want with what you do want. And so it's almost like making explicit the elephant in the room. So this would take some courage,
yeah.
but I do think it could be really powerful if, for example, someone was to make an adversarial comment or a comment that maybe put down the comment of someone else and you recognized it, you could make a contrasting statement, something like this, you know, I really don't want anyone in this space to feel like we are arguing against them or like their comments aren't respected and welcome. What I want is for all of us to feel safe expressing our hearts, to feel comfortable sharing our experiences. And you basically are just saying what you want and what you don't want. And you can do that in, and even like, that's a super direct way. If they make a comment and you're like, hey, that felt adversarial, brain, contrast. Okay. And you can just say it right out. I don't ever want someone to not feel valued. I want everyone to feel safe to share whatever it is that they want to share. But you could even dummy it back, like I was saying, just a little bit and say something like, you know, hey, what I don't want is to have a feeling of tension in here. I really want to invite the spirit. Let me see if I can rephrase that so that it feels a little, can I build on what you agree upon or so that it feels a little softer or, you know what I mean? Like, because I think sometimes what people do is pick out one point someone made and argue against that point and miss the 90% that they agreed upon. And so your job as a teacher is to then say, hey, let's choose not to focus on this. Let's focus on the 90% that we agreed upon. And at the same time, I'm going to contradict myself for just a second. You don't want to be afraid of differences of opinion. I think that there is a place to disagree with each other. I've had people disagree with me respectfully. Keyword is respectfully. And so if people aren't feeling safe because people are disagreeing in a way that doesn't feel motivated by love and respect, then it's not being done right. And part of that talking stick communication helps to kind of build in a skill without even making it explicit that will help it to feel more respectful, because it certainly feels better if someone has said, hey, I see it like you see it. Can I add to that? That feels way better. Or can I talk? There's these ABCs. You agree, build, and contrast. So you can talk about what you agree upon, build on that, and then to contrast. Here's the spot where I think I might feel just a little bit differently. But because you've already talked about your points of agreement, then it feels so, so much better when you get to the place where you might not see it the same way. But hey, we're allowed to have different experiences with the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Part of what I took out of what you said was, rather than calling out, dude, that was adversarial. You want to be bold. Maybe not quite in that way, though, right?
You don't want to label or point a finger or whatever.
Right. But you could say, okay, well, what I heard you say was this, and you point out that 10% that you agree on and focus on that. And you even talked about saying what we don't want is this, and what we do want is this other thing, right? So tell me if I'm wrong in this. If I were to try this out and do what you said, I think my first reaction would be to not try to point out what I don't want and then say that. But if it gets to a certain point, then I've got to just say it. I've got to say, you know what? This is what's going on. That's what we don't want. And then say what we do want. Am I right in that, do you think?
Yeah. Let me see if I can make it more concrete in what you just said, because I think you're right. It feels really bold. Here's kind of how I'm envisioning it going, just a little bit. And so this is, again, we're processing through this and giving just kind of these nuggets of advice. And if any of them don't feel comfortable or like they match your personality, you can flush them down the toilet. It really is okay. Nobody's offended. But what I'm saying is, it might be appropriate to say, it sounds like you disagree. Right? You could say, if somebody says something that's adversarial, you could say, it sounds like you disagree. So let me just hit the pause for just a second. And I want to make sure that we keep our mutual purpose here of all being edified. So just as we're doing this, let's make sure that, because what we don't want is for anyone to feel unsafe sharing their real feelings. What we do want is for us to all be uplifted by this. And so could I get someone else to maybe rephrase what was just said in a way that builds upon this difference? Let's talk about it. I'm happy to discuss it. I just want to make sure that we do it in a way that is really edifying. And I don't think that's going to hurt anybody's feelings. You can point out, it sounds like you see it a little bit differently. Hey, this is great. I love that. And even if they said it with a rude, condescending tone, you saying, sounds like you see it differently. Wow, this is a great opportunity. And just kind of hitting the pause button, and from a place of instruction, setting the stage, our goal is, what we don't want is. Now, let's discuss. Let's dig in.
So for those of you listening and you have this issue and you're driving, I want you to pull over and I want you to go back 1 minute, hit the 10 second back 6 times, and then I want you to write down exactly what Julie said. That is an excellent way to bring it up, so you're not being, it's not offending the person who said something, but at the same time, you're bringing it around to what it should be, and in a way that's non-threatening at all, not at all, but in a very loving way for the whole class, and it helps the other people with a psychological safety to say, oh, all right, if something does get out of hand, this person knows how to handle that. And I can say something, even if someone contradicts me, it's okay, because the teacher is going to bring it back around and be able to make it so that I feel safe in saying this. I mean, seriously, write it down, practice that. You don't have to say it verbatim, but you know, use that right. It was great, Julie. I love that part.
Thank you.
Especially
that makes me feel so good. In what you just said is really getting back to the trust part that we talked about, right? Like at the very beginning, you need to create trust that you have everybody's back in there, that you are going to respond appropriately to comments so that people feel safe making them. And that includes, it sounds like from what she pointed out, the comments of other people and the way that you choose to create that interaction. So can I throw out another suggestion? Is
Please,
it okay if I keep going?
Yes.
Okay, you can totally interrupt me. So here's something kind of interesting. Actually, I have two more points. So I'll make one of them at the very end when we're all done. But This is another idea. I have three. One, just really quickly. I have an issue with somebody in one of the classes that I teach that's just really, really challenging and has done some things that are super like socially not aware. Mm-hmm. Bless this person. I absolutely love them. Okay. We're going to call them Frank. Okay. And when Frank does one of those things, I find myself in my brain getting kind of irritated. And when I get irritated, what happens to the spirit?
Right.
Right? It's Bye-bye. Gonzo. And so there are two points related to this. So one of the things that my husband suggested is that I pull Frank aside outside of class and have a conversation. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess that would be a great idea. And tell Frank, hey, I love what you bring to this class. You have so many great comments. And I want to make sure that my job is to make sure that everybody in the class has a chance to speak. And my job is also to make sure that the comments come at the appropriate time. And so if you ever see me kind of ignore you or you see me kind of go, hold on, can that be our signal that I'm kind of trying to, you know, get the timing right and just be specific about some of the things that we might do in our code language, so to speak, to keep things moving as they should and to make sure the timing of comments is appropriate. And so it may be appropriate to have a conversation outside of class. Just that was the point there. And the second part of that is that I would encourage you to be really careful about the story that you're writing about the people mm-hmm. that are derailing class. So it would be really easy for you to create, according to Bonds That Make Us Free, a cycle of self-betrayal, where you basically are saying, this is how I see this person. And then everything that they do is going to reinforce that stereotype or that story that you have in your head about them. And you're going to be like, see, here they go again. Oh, that was condescending. And you're going to filter every interaction through that story. And therefore, you're going to see the things that justify the story. And so I would encourage you to take a little bit of time to try and rewrite that story. And part of it might be actually trying to get to know them a little bit better outside of class. You know, maybe even if one of them is in a calling connected to your calling, you know, just be like, hey, I'd love to just kind of chat with you a little bit about how class is going. Or maybe, you know, obviously it has to be appropriate if it's men, maybe you take your husband with you and you guys do a double date, or you just go visit them at their house, or, you know, something to that effect. I just think that if you can challenge your own stories about them so that they don't get reinforced, because this is a cycle of self-betrayal, they get reinforced and then you treat them in a way that reflects what you're thinking about them, which justifies them continuing the behavior back to you because you're treating them in that way. And the cycle continues. And so you've got to break the cycle. And part of what you can do is try and write a new story.
Right. So that reminds me of, I'm looking this up real quickly. Moment. Let me see if I can find this. It's a quote from Ender's Game.
Oh, fun.
Did you read that book or ever see that movie?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
The movie, not the book. I've not read the book.
Yeah, I haven't either. My family has, but let's see. Oh, maybe maybe I can't find it. Anyway, it was along the lines, and I've seen this in my own life. When I'm having a difficult time with someone, the more I get to know them, the more I start to understand and the more I start to love them rather than have them annoy me or be annoyed by them, right? And I've seen that work with family. I've seen that work with friends. I've seen that work with just some random person that I may have to work with almost never. But when I take the effort and it's almost, you almost don't want to. It's like, okay, how can I sweep this annoyance away?
Right.
And rather you want me to invest time into this annoyance.
Bring it closer? What? Right?
What? You know what? I don't have time for that. Well, yeah. Actually, maybe we need to make the time to get to know that person a little bit better. Let's go out to dinner. Maybe as couples go out to dinner or invite them over or whatever it may be. But I find that my relationship and my story completely changes that I typically write with them. It completely changes. And then I have either more, well, I'll say not either, but maybe more compassion, just more understanding, or maybe I finally start to understand, oh, this is how to best, I'm going to say deal with that person. That's not the right way to say it, but have a relationship, engage with them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Okay. Can I add one more tip?
Yes.
So the other thing that I thought a little bit about is in that email, I think that she said something about, I don't really know how to have a learner council with them. Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about how you could potentially have a learner council, because I've done that. And you don't have to have it take the whole entire hour. You can just take the first 5 to 10 minutes of class and really do this. And I think that you can do it at any point. It doesn't have to be like the first day of you teaching. You could say, hey, and just be transparent. Again, being authentic always wins. And you could say, hey, I'm struggling a little bit to really facilitate the type of conversation that I want. What I want is, and then maybe read the scripture from Doctrine and Covenants and say, this is my goal. This is what I understand my calling to be. And so I'm trying to dig into this more. And what I'd love for us to do is come up with some rules of engagement so that we can make sure that we're all bought into how we're going to engage with each other in here. And I think that what you will find is that some of the solutions that people propose, or some of the rules, if you will, for engagement that people propose, will actually target the issues that they're feeling insecure about. So for example, if you have someone who has a difficult time sharing, let's say that they have a difficult time sharing because it seems like someone else always one-ups them. Well, they may come up with a rule of engagement that would make it feel safe for them to engage. And they may come up with, you know, something, hey, I'd love to see us, you know, maybe, I don't know, you have to, it could, I feel like I could come up with like 10 specifics, but I don't want to derail the conversation into the specifics. The point that I'm trying to make is that I think your class will have the best answers to how you can best interact based on the culture of the class as it currently stands. And what you're trying to do is change the culture of the class. So let's be super intentional and almost explicit about it. And let's say you come up with 5 rules of engagement. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to actually, you know, make a little poster, laminate it, post it up on the board, say, you guys are so awesome in contributing to this. I just want to remind everybody, in case people weren't there, you know, what our rules of engagement are. Let's make sure that we're kind of following those and you hold each other accountable for it. And one of them might actually be this talking stick style communication, that before you make a comment, that you acknowledge the comment of the person just before you. Maybe not restate the whole thing. That's, you know, when you're first learning that skill of empathy, you have to restate the whole thing. You have to make sure you captured everything. You have to make sure that person understands. But maybe the rule of engagement, once you've learned that skill, is that you just acknowledge the previous comment before moving on. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So just, I think that can be really useful. I'm teaching a marriage class right now, and it's interesting because we're talking about communication specifically. And as we started talking about safety, like creating safety so that you can have that conversation, and what people's kind of default behaviors were when they got frustrated, And they were talking about them amongst themselves. The exercise that I had them do is come up with some rules of engagement when you need to have a tough conversation. And I'll be interested to see what they come back this week with, because that was, you know, what they were supposed to do together at home. I do feel like people feel safer participating when there are some ground rules. Like, you go into it trusting the other person to keep the rules that you've set together. And so it can feel a little bit more comfortable to bring up hard things.
Yeah. Because you can always look back to those rules and say, all right. And you know, if someone breaks the rule, it, you may or may not want to be bold enough to say, time out. You broke, you know, technical there. No, you, yeah. I mean, it's in the end, you could say, okay, how did we do in these rules? Well, we could have been better, and let them have the conversation around it.
Right. I love that. And I love the idea that people can apologize if they mess up.
Yeah.
Apologies go a long way, right?
Yep.
So acknowledge it. If you botch it and you're like, I am so sorry. That probably didn't feel great when I talked over you. I shouldn't have done that. I apologize. Like, that will also build trust and strengthen the relationships within the class.
Yeah. Good. Any other thoughts you have around this?
Okay. So I think that was most of mine. Hold on. Let me just make sure. Oh, here's one other just kind of playful one. If you are getting frustrated that certain people are dominating and you want to get more and more people to participate, I think I may have mentioned this once before. I can't remember. Todd and I talked about it. Todd's like, give everybody 5 tokens and say, my challenge to each of you is to use your tokens. And once your tokens are used up, you're done.
That's
kind
great.
Of a thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? And just make a game out of it. Maybe it's not 5, maybe it's 3, but part of what you're doing is you're trying to get people who don't normally speak to speak. I dare you to use all your tokens. And people who speak too much to zip it. Limits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Limits. That's a better way of saying it than zip it.
Yeah. someone makes a comment. I'm sorry, you just used all 5 of yours. That was worth 5.
Yeah, if it's a long-winded comment, you can say, I value that at 5 tokens. You're done.
Yep. Thanks for
You're
playing.
You're in debt now.
Maybe next week.
You're in debt. You can't. No. You owe somebody. You got to negotiate to borrow somebody else's tokens. Sorry. You're done.
You want to borrow someone's tokens?
Yeah, see what you can negotiate. Do an act of service.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, overall, though, that's a great idea. Because, I mean, it could be fun. It could be fun, though. Because what it does is it helps people focus in on, if I'm going to say, I mean, it doesn't have to be 5. Maybe it's 3. Maybe it's more or less, whatever. But it helps people focus on, what I'm about to share, will it really add value? Will it, or am I just going to just go off on, you know, this topic because I know so much? No, well, if I know so much, then I'm going to choose the parts where that I'm going to say and then be done. Yeah.
I'm going to be selective.
That's right.
Yeah.
That would be kind of funny to be a teacher and then kind of evaluate that. Not to say the whole token thing yet, but to just evaluate that before you do and say, okay, Frank is an 11 token person. And...
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. Huh. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Or, you know, so with questions, as a teacher, it's really difficult to, I mean, you kind of get a sense of, oh, wow, that person spoke a lot, or, you know, maybe not enough or whatever it is. But with questions, what I like to have someone do sometimes is when I'm teaching, I like to have them write down the questions and what type of question. Is it a binary? Is it factual? Is it, you know, introspective, for example? What kind and how many? And then I think it would be interesting kind of using that principle to have someone just in the back writing down, all right, this person gave 5 comments and it took this long. That way you have almost a very objective or, you know, numerical way of looking at it and saying, okay, This is kind of the direction I need to go, rather than being a teacher and just kind of getting a vibe of, well, I think so, maybe, maybe not, but actually having some empirical, I don't want to say evidence, but empirical numbers to say, this is actually what's going on. Now, how can I look at it and deal with it appropriately?
Well, and I think that that's valid, because if you've written a story that they just drone on and on and on, then they start talking and their 10-second comment feels like 45 minutes. And so maybe the story in your head is influencing your perception of how many comments they're actually making.
Absolutely. And maybe you think, a lot of people are giving comments, when you realize that only 10 people out of 50, 60 gave comments.
Right. That's a good point.
That's a good point. Yeah, I need to somehow help that.
Help
spread it out.
Get rid of the imbalance. That's a good point, that sometimes our perception might be off. So having some actual data could help.
Yeah. Good.
I like it.
This is so good. I love when people write in and say, what do I do? Mm-hmm. And then we get to explore that.
I hope that it was helpful. It's hard not to interact and ask her questions, like, because this, are we actually seeing it right? I'm not sure that we're seeing it right. And so I would invite a response to this, if she is so inclined, to let us know. Did any of what we shared kind of ring a bell with you? Did any of it resonate?
Right. And if any of you are having a similar problem and you try any of the things, let us know. How did it work? Did it not work? Did it work? Yeah. Did it kind of work? Or in implementing this, what were your challenges? Because you may come up and say, I tried this, but it totally went off the wrong way this way. Okay, well, let's talk about that.
Tweak it. Let's talk about it. Totally. Yes. I love that.
Yep. Good. All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And if you would, as always, like, share, subscribe, comment, and in the whatever podcast medium you're using, if you would, please leave a comment and rate it. It helps us so very much and makes it so that other people, other teachers of the gospel, get great ideas and even ideas, again, from you. We want to hear those. So teachingrestore.com, let us know. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.